Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Okay, we're here for another installment of It's My House, and today the topic is team. We're taking off a continuation from Monday's live stream with Chris Collins. So today we're talking about team house building, team housing solutions 2023. So we're looking at, we're building up our momentum to go into 2023 as of today with Chris Collins, who will be on momentarily. And we're working on getting a new computer link sent out for you guys that want to listen to it online. But we want to address this topic on housing too today.
My home is not for sale, and if my home isn't safe, nobody's home is safe.
What Jim Salit is talking about is the city of Lakewood, Ohio, taking his house, his home, through eminent domain to make way for a high-priced condo that will pay the city more in taxes than he and his wife Joanne do. And he says he's not going to take it lying down.
It's the close-knit, beautiful neighborhood. It's what America's all about. And I'm going to fight them tooth and nail. I've just begun to fight.
I'm Mike Wallace.
I'm Morley Safer.
I'm Ed Bradley.
I'm Steve Croft.
I'm Leslie Stahl. Those stories and Andy Rooney tonight on 60 Minutes.
Just about everyone knows that under a process called eminent domain, the government can and does seize private property for public use to build a road or a courthouse. But did you know the government can also seize your land for private use if they can prove that doing it will serve what is called the public good? Cities across the country have been using eminent domain to force people off their land so that private developers can build more expensive homes and offices, which will pay more in property taxes than the buildings they are replacing. Under eminent domain, the government buys your property, paying you what is determined to be fair market value. But now, people who don't want to sell their homes at any price just to see their land go to another private owner are fighting back.
The bottom line is this is morally wrong, what they're doing here. This is our home, and we're going to stay here, and I'm going to fight them tooth and nail. I've just begun to fight.
Jim and Joanne Salit are refusing to sell the home they've lived in for 38 years in a quiet neighborhood of single-family houses in Lakewood, Ohio, just outside Cleveland. The city of Lakewood is trying to use eminent domain to force the Salits out to make way for more expensive condominiums. But the Salits are in effect telling the town, hell no, they won't go.
We talked about this when we were dating. I used to point to the houses and say, Joanne, one of these days we're going to have one of these houses. And I meant it. And I worked hard.
What'd you do?
I worked in the pharmaceutical industry. And we worked very hard for this. And paid it off, and we said, oh, we've got it. We paid off our home. I retired, and now we're going to spend the rest of our days here and pass this on to our children.
But Lakewood's mayor, Madeline Kane, has other plans. She wants to tear down the Salit's home, plus 55 homes around it, along with four apartment buildings and more than a dozen businesses, so that private developers can build high-priced condominiums and a high-end shopping mall, and thus raise Lakewood's property tax base.
This is a project.
The mayor told us she sought out a developer for the project because Lakewood's aging tax base has been shrinking and the city simply needs more money.
This is about Lakewood's future. Lakewood cannot survive
without a strengthened tax base. Is it right to consider this a public good? Absolutely.
What you're saying effectively is that the Salit neighborhood has to be sacrificed for the greater good of the city of Lakewood.
I guess I'm saying that that neighborhood is being asked to, and it's difficult and it's unfortunate that they are being asked to give up their home.
They want this whole area because of the view of the park.
Well, it's a beautiful view.
It is an awesome view. They know it's gorgeous, and they want it. It's that simple.
This whole area is called Scenic Park, but that's the problem. Because it is so scenic, it's a prime place to build upscale condominiums with great views over the Rocky River. Those condos will be a cinch to sell.
But the condos can't go up unless the city can remove the Salits and their neighbors through eminent domain. And to legally invoke eminent domain, the city had to certify that this scenic park area is really, quote, blighted.
We're not blighted. This is an area that we absolutely love. It's a close-knit, beautiful neighborhood. It's what America's all about. And, Mike, you don't know how humiliating this is to have people tell you you live in a blighted area and how degrading this is.
You're the mayor. You know the place. Tell me what is blighted about that area.
The term blighted is a statutory word. It really doesn't have a lot to do with whether or not your home is painted. It is a legal statutory term
meaning
that is used to describe an area. And the question is whether or not that area can be used for a higher and better use.
What does that mean, a higher and better use? What's higher and better than a home?
The term blight is used to describe whether or not the structures generally in an area meet today's standards.
And it's the city that sets those standards. So Lakewood set a standard for blight that would include most of the homes in the neighborhood. A home could be considered blighted if it doesn't have the following.
3 bedrooms, 2 baths, an attached 2-car garage, and central air. Now, this community is over 100 years old. Who has all those things?
You mean it's blighted if it doesn't have 3 bedrooms?
Those things I just told you. That's the criteria. And it's ridiculous.
You don't have central air?
No, and we don't need it because of the air. We always have a breeze.
Sure.
Right off Lake Erie, the breeze comes right through here all the time. We counted all the attached garages in Lakewood. There's 20 in the whole city.
We counted 20.
And by the way, we got up at a meeting and told the mayor and all 7 council members their houses are blighted according to this criteria.
My understanding is that using the criteria that are in place, more than 90% of the houses in Lakewood could be deemed blighted, including the houses of the mayor and of every one of the city council members. True? Do you have 2 bathrooms?
No.
Blight. 2-car garage?
No.
Blight. Is the garage attached?
No.
Blight. And your lot size is under 5,000 square feet?
Oh, well under.
You've called that area a cute little neighborhood. You didn't call it a cute little blighted neighborhood. I mean, you and I know that it's not a blighted neighborhood.
I would never personally walk that neighborhood and indicate that that neighborhood is not attractive or, I mean, I would never say that.
It's a cute little neighborhood.
It is a cute little neighborhood. You'll get me to say it on the record. It is a cute little neighborhood.
Cute? Maybe. But without those new condos, it won't produce enough property taxes to satisfy the mayor and the city council.
That's no excuse for taking my home. My home is not for sale. And if my home isn't safe, nobody's home is safe in the whole country, not only Ohio, but this is rampant all over the country. It's like a plague.
This is a nationwide epidemic.
That story from 60 Minutes, which if you want to see the visual of it, because we just played the audio, in its entirety. It's on YouTube. Just type in 60 Minutes Eminent Domain. That story is, 30-plus years old. And what you just heard in that story, and as Mr. Jim Salit said, if his home isn't stable, we're talking about he had a nice little, you'll see the house in the 60 Minutes interview on YouTube, nice little white picket fence, clean-cut neighborhood, all-American neighborhood, all-American house, absolutely no blight. You heard that from the mayor. Blight is a legal term used in that particular community, but it was before they had it, and then it's 30 years later, it's still going on. So some people, in order to get affordable housing, are going to have to learn how to build their own house. And we brought back on today Chris Collins, and we're going to bring him on momentarily. Today's live stream podcast is titled Team Housing. Now, if you're on a Blog Talk, on our scrolling marquee on Blog Talk Radio, there's a picture of a wolf. So team building or wolf pack team building, housing solutions for 2023. So we're going to bring up some strategies that you can put into use starting now for 2022. Now, before we bring Chris on, Mama Evelyn, press 1 so I can see which phone you're on so I can open up your mic. We're going to bring on Mama Evelyn from Chicago, and she has a program titled Reclaiming Our Youth. And she has an event that happens once a year, and we're going to be participating in it because the way I want to use that event is for youth that want to learn how to build their own, let's say, tiny house, okay, and that will give them a skill set. Mom Evelyn, press 1 on your phone. You might be pressing it so I can see it on my switchboard. And we want to bring her on first. Well, you know what? I tell you what, Mama Evelyn, because I know you got a time. Wait a minute. She says she doesn't hear anything or anybody. Okay. Let's get this cleared up. Okay, 309, Chris Collins, are you there? Can you hear me?
Yes, sir, I can.
Great. Chris, while we're waiting to get some bugs out of this for this morning, share with us, you are, for new listeners, who you are and the name of your organization and what you guys do.
My name is Chris Collins, and I'm the founder of Housing Our People Everywhere, and we're a 501c3 charity that wants to give a gift to the world, a solution to end the homeless problem, to recover and rebuild natural disasters, and give people a purpose and let them know they're all equal.
Great. Now, we're trying to get her on. We're trying to figure out the bugs here, but for youth, because you've mentioned I guess from time to time work with youth. Tell me what did they learn or what did they do with the organization? Young people in their teens.
We're able to show them that there's peace on earth in the palm of their hand, and they can also give themselves a peace of mind knowing that they're making their streets safer, they're changing someone's life, and they're not even breaking a sweat doing it, but they're building something that can last 1,000 years, can be recycled 1,000 times, and like I said, not ever touching a saw, but it's what they saw, because they built something superior to what's being built today for housing.
Okay. If you can give us a visual the best you can, because this is audio, we don't have a visual part. But if you can paint a visual for us, like they show up to the work site and they have no experience, you know, what could they experience by the end of the day?
An enlightening to know that something they've never done could be turned in from a flat object to a 3D object, to another 3D object, to another 3D object. And it all came from washers, dryers, refrigerators, stoves, water heaters, and cars that were destroyed or that are just junk going to that pile. But these kids get to see this machine make the material, or they get the material just sitting in front of them. And it's an ABC 1-2-3 puzzle for them to put together. And they can do it right in the middle of a parking lot. They can do it in a front yard. You can do it in your driveway. This is a way that they can come home and actually show their parents by taking them somewhere where they just show them what they just did and say, hey, Mom, Dad, we could actually, this package could show up at our house and we could do this as a family project. And that is going to be the enlightenment to the adults to realize that their kids are being the change they want to see. And every child that I've been able to engage with, I took a 13-year-old and a 16-year-old and built a tiny home in 2.5 hours. And those kids had never built anything in their life, but they were very proud of it. I even did a demonstration and tried to destroy one of the trusses that they built. And I've got those videos that I couldn't do it, and I wound up putting it up on the building. So if it would have been made of wood, it would have been apart. And these kids got to see how durable and how strong and what their capabilities was without struggling. They weren't struggling to help somebody else struggle. They were doing something positive.
I like it. Now, what were the dimensions of the tiny house that they built within 2 hours?
It was 10 foot by 10 foot.
Okay, 100 square feet.
Yeah, it was 100 square feet, but then it had an attic area, queen-size bedroom in it, that added another 75 square feet.
Okay, great, great. All right, hold, let me see if we can get Mom Evelyn in from Chicago. Mom Evelyn, can you hear me? Mom Evelyn? Her, okay, she can't hear me, so I don't know what's happening on that end with that. Mama Evelyn has, she's out of Chicago. She has a once-a-year program called Reclaiming Our Youth, and I think it's the last weekend, July, and we want to participate in that as a vendor where Chris, what you just explained, we want to replicate that at that event. But let me see. I'll try again. Mama Evelyn, can you hear me? 773-658. And I don't think she can hear me. Now, with your nonprofit, Chris, who are some of the people besides the youth that are coming to you for help or what kind of help?
Well, I mean, I get people from all, there's all sorts of problems going on in the world. Everybody has problems. And I ask people to give me your problem so that we can claim it, because there's a solution for every problem, but you don't have to necessarily go through it alone. Phone call at least 3 times a week from the VA here in Illinois asking me to go to some veteran's home, and because they need me. And I'm doing a paraplegic veteran's home down in D Dietrich, Illinois. It's outside Charleston. But I'm putting in one of those sit-in tubs that will go up to 42 inches, a Hoya lift to be able to get him out of the wheelchair and into the tub, another Hoya lift that would be portable that will be able to get him out of the bed and into his chair. But I'm bringing him home from the nursing home. And I just got another lady, she might even be listening right now, that she went through a very bad tragedy this past week. It was another veteran that I met on my travels from Nashville back to Illinois. And I've been in his life always, but now he's not with us, but I know he is in spirit. But she's going to be going to that house, and she has 20 years of nursing experience, and she's going to become a helping hand to the lady that his wife, so that way he can have a nice fulfilled life and be at home and not have to be in a nursing home. So it's anybody and everybody. There's no gender. There's no race. The only race there is the human race. And if you're human, if you're a human being human is by reaching out to me, telling me what's going on so that we can actually do something. And
now, nursing homes, I don't know, depends on which one you're in. They can run maybe $5,000 or $6,000 a month. So a lot of people don't have that. Then you do have, I get Google alerts every day, so I get stories almost every day about elderly people getting evicted from nursing homes. What strategy would you suggest, if possible, that somebody that is in a nursing home, what alternatives do they have that might be coming through your HOPE program?
We would want to address, you know, what is it that put them in the nursing home? How much assisted living do they need? The one thing that every person is they need companionship. We are social people and are social mammals, and we can't be alone. And that's one of the things, the biggest thing that we have wrong in our elderly population is they feel alone because people don't pick up the phone and call them and say, how you doing? Or show up and maybe ask a question, you know, what's on your mind? Is there anything bothering you? These are the things that would take you to people and just, you know, energize them to realize they're not alone. Because I did a test, you know, I called 100 people that I haven't talked to in years. And what I did was ask them how they doing and if they needed anything. It's been a long time. And none of them needed anything other than me to call and ask because nobody's called and asked how. So I suggest people take that test. Try it. You know, maybe you don't know 100 people that you can call, but maybe you know 5. And you will be shocked by changing those 5 people's lives and perspective today by giving them something positive. They could be having a lethargic bad morning, and your phone call turn around and give them joy. And that's what people need. People need joy. So if we were looking at what are we going to do about working with the elderly, I want to engage with them every day. And I want whatever's in their mind and their experiences that they've went through, we want to be able to bring them out and show our children that there's so much that they can learn that they've never seen, that never heard of, because it all happened before they were born. Because this is a different world we live in today. And we need to be able to let our children know and go back to the basics of what it takes to truly be happy. You know, when people didn't have all this technology, they were happy. This technology didn't change happiness. But it also didn't necessarily give joy in the correct way. People are using their time and wasting it by playing a video game. I'd rather you play my video game and actually do something when you do something. You make a difference. You change people's lives by you playing a video game. Now we're talking about progress.
Right. If anybody's got any questions for Chris Collins, 619-768-2945, and then just press 1. We'll see your hand, and then we can patch you directly in to if you have any questions. Chris, now, for the last, I don't know, maybe 10 years or so, there's been, I guess everybody on the planet's heard of a tiny house. Some people call it the tiny house movement. What are your thoughts on tiny houses, and why would a person be even interested in having anything to do with a tiny house?
Well, it comes down to, you know, think about how many college students that are homeless. And to be homeless, you know, if you're surfing a couch, you're homeless. So I happen to have one of the people in my organization that is did her doctoral on homeless college students. We need to not only build tiny homes, but I want people to understand what the tiny home movement and what it can do for you to continue moving you monetarily forward, because I want you to to grow into what you need. And when you come out of high school, you don't need more than a bedroom, a kitchen, a bathroom, a living room, and maybe a little extra sleeping space for someone else. That, you know, that's a nice thing to have. You can have that in a smaller footprint, beautiful, easier to clean, and still have the space. You can, some of them, you can be able to set them up to move them. Other ones you set in place. You know, just about every city in this country, you're allowed to have an ADU. That's an additional dwelling unit on your property. Now, you can turn that into an Airbnb, or that can be a place for family when they come and visit. And they have still their privacy because you're bringing another family or another person into a situation. Why not give them what they need? And people always need privacy. So you can either utilize it for what you're doing, even if you're utilizing just the small one while you're building your bigger one. But once the bigger one's built, now the little one can actually become income.
Okay, that's a very good move. And a lot of people are doing just as you shared with us. Matter of fact, you mentioned college students, homeless college students. UCLA, University of California, Los Angeles, they have one of their parking lots designated. Matter of fact, they even have a Facebook page. They have a safe parking program, that's set aside for homeless or houseless college students at UCLA. So they might not be able to share a room or share an apartment or share a house because they're in the Brentwood area. Well, Southern California is expensive, point blank. And they're paying high tuitions on top of that. So the UCLA has, as a matter of fact, you just put in safe parking UCLA, a safe parking lot UCLA. They have a Facebook page, and then there's some information written up on the Internet about them. And I suspect there are other colleges like that right now. But Walmart in some places, not all Walmarts, they allow parking, overnight parking at some of their locations. And I think for Cracker Barrel in some of the, I don't know which ones, but you know, you have to look it up online. And it can even create a business opportunity for some people as well. And what I like about tiny houses basically cuts out the fat because most people only live in about two rooms, some maybe three. And I'm not talking about a 10-room house when you have furniture in all those houses, but actually live in. And a lot of people just don't. So we'll get more into that. Now, on our Facebook page, and we'll be having offline events that we're planning for next year. We might even cram in something for the end of this year, which is, I mean, basically we're in the last quarter of the year anyway. But If you go to our Facebook page, which is It's My House TV, It's My House TV, at the top of the page, unless somebody's loaded up something on there, we've got a four-acre tract of land in northern Florida where we'll be doing some events, teaching people how to build, and we got some pictures of that. It's 4 acres of raw land. And then I'll be there. Then I just maybe about two or three pictures of me on there. Well, you'll recognize me on there. So that's on our Facebook page, It's My House TV. Now, we've been trying to get Mama Evelyn out of Chicago on here, but we haven't been successful at doing that. She has a program called Reclaiming Our Youth, which is all, I'd like her to just break that down, but we're still trying to get her on air. She's on our switchboard. And let's see, let's take a call here at 410. 410 area code, your mic is open.
Hey, peace and blessings. Peace and blessings. How is everybody doing?
Fine.
All right. My name is Anthony Whitfield, and I'm so grateful to hear Chris on the line. Chris, how you doing, man? You doing a spectacular job, man.
I'm doing wonderful, my friend. Nice to hear you.
Yes, sir. Well, look, let me tell you, don't get it twisted. He does tiny houses, but he also have a program called Why Rent? So individuals that have jobs that's going to work every day but still paying $2,000 a month for their rent, they can own. And so I'm so happy to be here and listening to this forum because the truth of the matter is we can solve a lot of our American problems. The solutions are there already. We just got to implement them. What we're doing is taking shipping containers, turning them open, cutting them open, and making nice-sized houses along with the tiny houses. So with the containers and with the metal that Mr. Chris was talking about, we're able to do the same thing with the shipping containers, but make them as a four-bedroom, four-baths. All depends on what your budget is. If you're paying $2,000 in rent, why are you renting? We have the solutions. Mr. Chris has the solutions. And I just want to say thank you so much, Chris. You inspire me so much to never give up, regardless what's going on. And I just say thank you so much, Chris. I got your back 100%.
Much love, brother. Thank you.
All right, you know what? You bring up, matter of fact, let's delve into this a little bit more. I agree with you. If you're paying $2,000 a month rent, you need to own something, in my opinion. Now, as a landlord, I would be glad to rent to you for $2,000. But if you're paying $2,000 a month, you need to be owning something. The next thing is shipping containers. Now, when it comes to zoning, okay, you can't put up a shipping container anywhere in the United States. So, Chris, what areas do you suggest where it will be easier if you wanted to buy a shipping container and then renovate it or recycle it into a livable home? Because, like, for instance, in Washington, D.C., that ain't happening. Okay.
No,
however.
No, sir. I'm from Baltimore. From Baltimore. I live in Miami, Florida right now. And there's many a container houses in D.C. The problem is you don't see it because it's covered up when it get landed. Once it's on the property, you'll never know. It's just like a prefab house. It's a lot one day, and the next day you got a house on it.
All right, because I got a house in D.C. myself. I grew up there. I got a house right now. It's sitting vacant in D.C.
Oh, man.
Tiny houses.
It's a done deal.
All right. Tiny houses in D.C., the last I checked, now there's a place in, Mount Pleasant section of D.C. They had tiny houses there, but you couldn't live in them. They're only for exhibit use only. And the last time I was in D.C., I mean, what area of the city would you say the shipping container houses are in?
Brother, they're all over D.C. You never know because it's covered up by the time it lands. It comes in just like a prefab house. So you never know it is that. In D.C., you can make an apartment buildings out of there. There's nothing but going down to the building code. You'll see exactly what I'm talking about.
All right, I have to check that out because the last time.
Us, I will send him the information in a little bit. But everything is there. 5-6 years ago, yes, I agree with you. I went through hell going through different legislation and everything to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
The people
okay.
made it happen because they had the funds and the backing to do it. They
okay.
have the funds and the backing to go through Congress. But in every jurisdiction right now,
yeah, because D.C. is even strict on Airbnbs. You can have an Airbnb in D.C., but you have to actually live on the premises. Whereas I live in Florida. I don't live in D.C., so I couldn't make my house into an Airbnb in D.C. But looking at the broad brush across the United States, there's certain cities that you can set up a shipping container home, and in other cities, due to zoning, that you can't do it. Same with a tiny house. So, Chris, could you explain a little bit about zoning and maybe some places that you know of where you can legally set up a tiny house and or a shipping container home?
Yes, sir. There is a thing called the IRC, that is the International Residential Code Book for Building Homes. And there is an Appendix Q. And all you got to do is get your city government to adapt Appendix Q in their IRC. And as far as a shipping container home, that is classified as steel framing. So steel framing is used in your commercial in every city in the country. So by bringing the Appendix Q to the table, what that does is it lets you build on a smaller footprint. You can build a 225-square-foot fully functional home and with lower ceiling heights, put a loft above the kitchen for a sleeping system. These are all things that are in there. They've already been written. It's something that's for the world. As, like I said, it's the International Residential Code Book. And
all right.
This material needs every code in it. It's twice as strong as wood. I can span further distances than wood and meet the same load parameters. So there's those answers are there.
All right. Now, what are shipping containers, for people who don't know, what can you buy a shipping container for these days? I mean, it depends on the size and everything, but just ballpark figures.
Well,
not to renovate it, but just the shell itself.
Yeah, just the shell itself. They used to be cheap, and they went up. And they cost up into, you know, from $5,000 and up now to maybe $10,000, depends on how new the unit is and whether or not it still has the, if you need it to have the export to be able to be shipped across the thing, because they can only be so old and they go out of date and they won't let them ship on the containers anymore. That's the reason that they really don't ship them, but they don't want them back. Once they build them in these other countries, we want to be, you know, they just leave them here. They're just piling up. Well, people started doing things with them. Well, we can also do a storage facility in every state for natural disasters, and we go move everything out of your home if a flood's coming, so we don't have to clean up your personal belongings. But if your whole life left in that truck, you would leave too, so we can save your life. And if your home's there when it's over, we move you back, but if it's not, we build it back, and we do it as a community, and we create jobs immediately, and this is something that's a true inspection that we need to be able to put a stitch and a wound on, and antibiotics on, and make sure that it never comes back, and we can do that. If we do have, I mean, all of the stuff coming into our ports every day, and those countries don't want it back, and we're not shipping products to them. So that means it's just backing up. And if we bring the right proposal to the table, you know, those things are unlimited as far as what we can get that way. But I know for a fact that we can also turn them into something and utilize all the trucking companies that are in the area to grab these things. When they show up with an empty, they put it in front of the house. We load it, but we also mobilize. You know, we pull into a city of 100,000 people, and I help you get your house done. I'm going to ask you, when we get your house loaded, I need you to go next door and help your neighbor. So now we got 200,000 hands moving things. We can move a city, plus whoever else shows up and that works the program. And we always keep the program, and when we do this and we set this into place, it'll be an A, B, C, D week, and you are either in one of those groups, and that week you are on call for somebody to watch somebody's back somewhere. And if they need you, you're gone to go help them. But to know that your family's still being taken care of back home, you can go there with a clear conscience. Because I got people that are listening right here that are on the ground right now doing it, and I'm pretty sure she's probably going to tap in, probably be a couple more. And I just thank all of them for what they do, but it is time for us to make that difference and do something, and I'm so proud to be here and humbled to be here to share this with you and everyone else.
Now, for just a guesstimate, with pulling permits and all this in a city like D.C., isn't it as expensive as a New York City or San Francisco, but probably more expensive than Orlando, Florida, someplace like that. What would be like, without just basic stuff, not the bells and whistles, what would it probably cost, let me pick area D.C., South, sir, matter of fact, 410, what's your, give me your first name, because I don't want to, you know.
Oh, my name is Anthony Whitfield. My name
thank
is
you.
Anthony
Whitfield.
Anthony,
thanks for calling in. Let's stay in the area of D.C., you know over there by Malcolm, over there by the big chair?
Uh-huh.
You know, okay, let's say going out to Congress Heights. What would be ballpark figure for land over in that area?
Okay. The land is something different. Every piece of land is different, okay? It depends on what they want. It depends on the comps in the area. Okay, what our project is going out off of Route 40, okay, between Baltimore and D.C., and purchasing 20 acres of land or 30 acres of land.
Right.
And building it, building houses, not just tiny houses, but a whole community, a whole development with these steel metal frame houses. The good part about what our program does is that we just don't have to use shipping containers. Mr. Chris has a machine that we can build our own metal structures and design it any which way we want to do it. That's the good part about what we have to offer. Another good part that we have to offer is all of the work that's being done on the houses is not going to the lowest bidder. It's not going to the lowest contractor. All the work that's being done is being done through a training program. In other words, my son was just shot in the neck in D.C. He was actually shot in Bowie. Don't ask me how. Don't ask me how he got shot in Bowie. Bowie was our safe haven, minus the cops, right?
Right.
But he was shot in Bowie. I want to take our troubled youth, people that graduated from high school, people that didn't graduate from high school but want a better life, move them on the property of 100 acres, 20 acres, 50 acres of land, and they live there and they build it. Now we're able to give them positive motivation and skills, electrical, plumbing, HVAC, roofing. So while I say all of that, we have a partnership with the government that will pay us 70% of the labor costs of all the work that's being done. So that means a house that you want to buy for $300,000 from a regular builder,
right,
we're able to cut that in half. Because we are now 501c3, we're able to get supplies because we're buying all of our supplies in bulk. So we're not buying sheetrock one house at a time, one room at a time. We're buying sheetrock truckloads at a time, electrical wire, truckloads at a time. That's how we're able to get the cost down, because we're not just building one house. We're building a development for anybody that's renting, anybody that wants help. If you're homeless and you want help, come to us. If you're a veteran and you're having problems, come to us. If you have your head on straight and you're ready to move forward, come to us. We want you to live on this development. And this development is just not in D.C., Moulton Golf Course. I don't know if you know about them, but over there we had a project. Right outside of that we have projects that we can launch right away. I'm out of Miami and Georgia. So I can go anywhere and just duplicate the process. So that means the cost of everything that we're doing comes down significantly. And that's where we're at.
All right. So now it sounds like you're doing what, urbanized areas?
The inner city, like I said, I'm from Baltimore. So if you ride through Baltimore, you're going to see nothing but empty lots. Every major city. Every major city is nothing but empty lots where houses were knocked down, condoned, and they just knocked them down. Those are the lots we want in the inner city. But we're going to build them, manufacture them on the lot that's right outside the city, the 20s, 50s, 100 acres of land. So everything will be manufactured there and moved straight to that land.
Okay. All right.
So while
we're
building the house, we're doing on the other piece of land, on the piece of land, we're doing the infrastructure. And when I say infrastructure, I mean the water, the electric, disposal. Everything is being built in. So when the containers come, we just put it on the ground, weld it together. The person can move in 2-3 days.
Great. Now, go in a little bit more detail about this training program you're talking about.
Man, listen to me. My heart is in a training program. As a young person in middle school and elementary school, my parents used to tell me how I used to get people together to sell my candy. So I was a hustler since I was a child. But I was also in the streets, too. I don't know why. I didn't have to be. My story is different. I didn't have to be in the streets, but I chose the street life. But instead of being gangster and everything else, I provided real jobs for people. So the money that we made, we built houses. We bought houses. We bought land. We did different things. So I saved a lot of people's lives because I was able to travel and train them. I'm a 15-year veteran. So in the military, it taught me discipline. It also taught me organization. So discipline is the number one thing for everybody's life, to be able to move to the next level. If you're not disciplined, if you don't wake up in the morning and make up your bed, that's not discipline. Because when you come home, you're going to come home to a sad room. Discipline, how to talk, how to walk, how to believe in yourself, I worked directly with a guy named Les Brown. I don't know if you know him or not. He's a powerful motivational speaker. And we're doing our event November 11th through the 13th here in Miami, Florida. And so it's called Champion Mindset. You got to have a mindset to want more. You got to have a mindset to want to be greater than what you see in everyday life. Our youth do not see nothing greater because when they open up the door in Baltimore and in Landover, right, and in Bowie, they know where the drugstore is, the drug house. They might not be on the corner like they are in Baltimore, but they already know. We got to change their mindset and providing them real job skills, not just electrical. When you graduate from this program, you're going to be proficient in electrical, plumbing, HVAC, roofing. Okay, let's say you're not really into that construction stuff. So I'm going to teach you how to trade. I'm going to teach you how to be IT, how to code, right? How to troubleshoot computers. Okay, let's say you're not into that. We got architects that we can train you in architect, drafting. Let's say you want to be a main rapper or a gangster or music, audio, video. Everything comes on this land. All the training programs is already there. And that's ready to go. Just waiting on Mr. Chris to pull the trigger. Mr. Chris, why ain't you pulled the trigger yet? We're just waiting on you.
Oh, we've got the loaded gun. We've got it cocked back. And the thing is when we pull this trigger, we will be saving lives. And I will be able to show you peace on earth just by us coming together. We have, well, like I said, it's loaded, but it's a weapon of reconstruction, not mass destruction. And I know that there's some other people that's on this and listening that can cover some things. One, we wanted to talk about urban and rural development. We'll get into that here in a minute because we have some very educated people that are already part of our team that are here to embrace and educate and implement this solution. So it's time to pull the trigger. That's why we're here. And I thank you, Anthony, for accepting my invitation to be here this morning because I knew you could throw some things at this and it would not just be coming from me because this is all about all of us coming together in unity, giving an equal opportunity, showing equality. So this is where we're at, and I look forward to the rest of this conversation.
Anthony, thanks for that feedback. Don't go anywhere. Mama Evelyn, can you hear us now? If you can, Mama Evelyn, just press 1 on your phone. They'll let me know that you can hear us, and then that we can patch you into the conversation. Okay, well, while we're waiting on that bug to debug itself. Oh, wait a minute. Ah, now we got it. Now we got it. Okay. Mama Evelyn, how are you doing?
I'm blessed.
Good, good. Now, you run an event yearly. Tell us a little bit about yourself, the event that you run yearly, and then why you got that event started.
Well, I've been an activist in Chicago since 1972. I don't seek government funding because my idea on it is why do we keep going to the people who created the problem and expecting them to solve it? So in the process, I worked with 10 different police commanders and assisted a couple of them in getting some bad cops off the street. And in the process of doing that, I ended up losing 3 of my 4 grandsons to street violence. They were murdered on the city of Chicago, but that's another story altogether of who they say was behind them getting killed. So in their honor, because they helped people when they were alive. So every year I do something called Reclaiming Our Youth Day, where it is strictly for Afro-descendants. The vendors do not pay a setup fee to us. They pay a child to work with them that day. And hopefully, my goal is that they will, the young people will develop relationships with these vendors to learn how to do different things. I also take them for a walk through the neighborhood and stuff like beer bottles. I teach them how to repurpose them and with something that it costs them 68 cents to make, but when we sell it on the market, they make $10, and that's their own business, and it's something they don't need somebody hanging over their shoulder to do. They're able to do it by themselves and show their creative spirit. In order to have the money for it, my grandma was a chef, and she had a 23 spice blend that she used to cure different diseases that black folks have. So that is how I make the money to have Reclaiming Our Youth Day, because I don't see government funding, like I said. So, and we work with children from as young as 7 up to 20 years old. At 21, they can come and set up their own table if they already have their business. So, and we do, I belong to an organization called Sisters in the Struggle, where we do different things for families. I do grief counseling, trauma counseling, and I will be, right now I'm looking for an location in Chicago, a multi-purpose location, because I am going to be teaching children how to work through their trauma with their family and friends using games.
Now, Mom Evelyn, okay, I'm just thinking out loud, but has anybody, what if there was a vendor there next year, 2023, because that's sort of what we're talking about right now today, that would teach the, I mean, well, you know, you got kids 7 to what, 21? Well, 21's a man, but or an adult, excuse me, because you got women too. The idea of teaching them how to build their own house.
I think that's a fantastic idea. You know, the UNIA up here is doing something like that. The Marketing Garvey Association.
That doesn't have the government backing. We got to fund it ourselves. That's it.
The UNIA, you know, that's the Marcus Garvey Association. I don't think they're getting any funds from anybody to do it.
Mm-hmm. There is a lot of things you can do without government funding. There's a lot of things you can do without government funding.
I've done everything I've done so far with government funding.
That's no
question.
Problem.
What part of Florida are you in, big brother?
I'm in Lakeland, which is 30 miles east of Tampa.
Okay.
45 minutes away from Orlando.
Yes.
On our Facebook page, we're at It's My House TV. That's our Facebook page. I've got some pictures there. We've got 4 acres of land where we plan on training people. That's 3 hours away from me about 29 miles away from Valdosta, Georgia, but in Hamilton County, Florida. So I'm 3 hours away from that. But right now, I'm in Lakeland, Florida.
Excellent.
And
I know
you're
exactly
in Miami, and that's about a four-hour drive. That's about a four-hour drive from where I'm at right now.
Yes, my office, my main office, is based out of Orlando.
Okay, that's 45 minutes away.
Yep, I'm based out of there, but we have a program where we're going around helping people with or without insurance to fix their hurricane damage.
Oh, okay,
A lot of houses that's got condemned, we're turning them into container houses.
All
okay.
Right.
So the people that's going to be doing the work, like my sister said, is going to be strictly people that need jobs. And it's a training program. If I give a person the skills, this is the biggest thing I want everybody to take out of. Take the money equation out of everything. How much money you going to make? Leave that alone. But if we teach people that you can learn electrical plumbing, you can get your license, you can become an entrepreneur and give them the skills to become the entrepreneur, starting with the mindset, then with discipline, we're going to change the nation. We're going to stop the violence. Nobody ever come up with a solution on why so many people are getting killed in our communities. Nobody coming up with solutions. Our solution is plain and simple. Get them and change their mindset. We're not going to save everybody, but sister, you're doing a great job. You're doing a great job. The one thing that I love the most about my profession is when people come back and say thank you. Not the money, not nothing, but the kids' lives that I saved. Parents coming back to saying, hey, you changed my son's life. Thank you. You changed my daughter's life. Thank you. That's what means the most to me.
I think that's right.
That's where we got to
Chris,
get you.
Chris, you got a lot out there. Now, if because we got people listening, you know, internet from all over the place. For people that might be interested in what you're doing, what are the next steps that they should take?
Well, you can reach out to hopeforhousing.org. You can do hopeforhousing.com. You can use hope4housing.org. You can reach out by phone, 309-542-6319. You can text, and it all starts with a discussion.
That's right. Sure does. Well, there are many solutions that can come out of this, and as Anthony was talking about, including social. Matter of fact, as you were talking, you made me think about there was a Time magazine article several years ago about this 11-year-old kid, young man. His street name or nickname, I'll put it that way, nickname was Yummy. And Yummy made the cover of Time magazine. It's online somewhere. Just put in Yummy, 11-year-old Chicago. And you'll see the Time magazine cover. But Yummy was killed in Chicago or assassinated, whatever term you want to use. He was a member of a gang, and two of his gang members, who were teens at the time, early teens at the time, they're the ones who killed him. I think one of them might be out of prison by now, but in any event. But so, Chris, when you talk about exchanging the gun with the bullets in exchange for a drill gun, I really like that idea. And if you teach, in my opinion, if you teach a young person how to build, including young ladies, because you do have some young ladies now that, you know, they're building. Their self-esteem will just shoot off the charts in a positive way. That's my theory. So that's one of the reasons why I'm glad Mom Evelyn's on here, because next year, 2023, we'll have a vendor booth there, and we want to organize a demonstration where they build something and people can see it and then walk through it and then deconstruct it and then, you know, set it up somewhere else. So, Mom Evelyn, go ahead, Anthony, what are you saying?
It's the models.
I did hear.
Yeah, it's not deconstruction, it's models. They build models, and then we can recreate that model. And some women don't want to do construction. They want to do hair. They want to be taxes. We can offer every single job profession out there training programs. I'm sorry. I'm just so excited. I'm sorry.
No, I really appreciate your excitement. And you use the right term.
I love it.
They can put together a model, and you're absolutely right. That's the right. That was the right word for what I was talking about. So, go ahead, Mama Evelyn.
When I was coming up, my dad made me and my sisters. We had to learn how to change the oil in the car, how to change a tire, how to hang a door, how to put in a window, change locks. Because my dad raised us with the idea that this society was going to continue to destroy our people by any means necessary, and you've got to be able to know how to take care of you. So we had to learn all of that stuff coming up.
I agree. Let's see, Chris, press one, because I think you dropped off. Press one, and I'm making sure I'm pressing the right, patching right. All right, here we go. All right, we got him back. Yeah, Mom Evelyn. Now, Mom Evelyn, now, your event is next. Now, we're doing some planning for next year, 2023, so your event is when next year, and people that want to get involved in that, I'm one of them. How can they get in touch with
you? My telephone number is 773-658-3377. Email address is ANB2002@yahoo.com. If you want to send me snail mail, it's 6141 South Michigan, apartment 609, Chicago, Illinois, 60637. Now, you know I'm old, so you know to text old people before you call them. Well, that way
okay,
you know we'll
answer. I wouldn't call you old, though. I don't think you're old at all.
Okay, how about seasoned?
There you go.
That's
seasoned.
That's beautiful right there, seasoned.
Yeah, that's the perfect word. You're seasoned.
Yeah, because she just put some seasoning on it when she said, when I was little, we had to learn how to change oil. There's so much common sense that was put in to the people before technology. Our children are lacking common sense now, and we want to embrace all of our coming into retirees. These are the generation where you taught us respect. Kid, I said, yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. Thank you. I respected my elders. But the one thing that I got from my elders more than anything was their education, their experience. And I got it for nothing, but I just had to pay attention. And I knew that I needed to do that from a very young age. I happened to have a neighbor kid that went and got a couple of hamsters. Next thing you know, this kid is a millionaire within a year. And he was six years old. So every child out here is a creator. We want them to create, and we will turn it in, you know, to an innovation, and that creation can pay them for the rest of their life. How many thoughts, how many creations are people going to have today? Just give me one, and that's 7.5 billion creations across this planet. Holy smoke. What could we do with that if we were all doing it? You know, if you take a penny from everything that's sold on Amazon, there's 1 billion products today sold on Amazon. Well, we have a way to get more than a penny, but you also have a way to get more than a penny too. And all we got to do is share these informations with each other. And if you reach out to my website, you reach out to the phone number, you'll get it. I will share it with you. And there's so many things that you spend money on every day that could change every person's life in every way. And it's taking from the 10% that have 90% of the money and giving us up to 15% to 20%. That's 100 or 200% more money than we're all getting now in our paychecks and living in the households and our lifestyles the way we do. What could we do with double that amount of money plus the amount of money we already get? Just by redirecting.
Yeah. You know the lesson I'm trying to get out here. Do you know that if
we
spend 10 cents with each other, just 10 cents out of every dollar, do you know that we can create 20,000 jobs a year in our community by just spending 10 cents out of every dollar with each other?
Here's something that you didn't know. You're in Chicago, and you need to know because you're a connected lady and you're an activist. Every electric and gas bill in the state of Illinois, 20% of it goes to this program. All they have to do is put their account numbers in a website.
Okay.
So right there's a change. Think about how much electric and gas is being spent in just Chicago alone. That's residence and commercial. Doesn't matter. And they'll pay the same thing today as they'll be paying in 2 years. It locks their bill and no more raising it. But in 2 years, they can relock it and keep it that way. But 20% of the money spent in Illinois just for electric and gas would, in 1 month, change the narrative of every city in the state.
All right. Well, there are plenty of people with those electric bills out there. I'm a big advocate for off the grid stuff, but I'm an extremist. So,
we're putting solar on everything. So I'm an extremist too because I want it built green. You know, if we build it green, this is the key, and it's taking those bills and eliminating them. But right now, you're paying them. So if you're paying them, support something. Support something positive. Support your children's future. Just because that money's going to your kids. They're now going to be able to get fed every day after school, every child. No one will go hungry. We have ways. We have partnerships. We have these things that we can put in place, and we can grow the food. We can grow the food for the restaurants that will be doing it at first. And now you're getting farm to table to every restaurant. How fresh is that food? This is something, and it also creates economy. But we don't have to worry about whether it's raining outside or whether it's snowing. It's still growing.
Right.
And that's what this is about.
Great. 619-768-2945, that's our live stream call-in number. We're still on our live stream. We got any questions to ask any of the people on the panel right now. If you're already in the studio, just press 1, and then I'll see your hand go up, and then, you know, we can plug you into the conversation today. The title of this live stream is Team Housing Solutions, and featured guest is Chris Collins, but we have other people here, Anthony, and then we have Mama Evelyn out of Chicago. And I think Anthony, he's in Miami, if I'm correct, at the present time. And
yes, I'm in Miami right now.
Miami. Now, What's going on in Miami? Because Miami is definitely on the grid. So how does, you know, what are you guys doing down there for housing solutions?
Well, let me tell you,
Miami is not a cheap city.
Let me tell you what's going on in Miami right now, because I'm living it. I'm going through a little separation, and I decided to move back to Miami instead of staying in Orlando, right?
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, I got money. I can move into a place right away. Do you know it's been 3 months and I still can't find a place?
Mm.
They want first, last, and deposit, right? Then they want to show you got 3 months, of what your rent is. Of what your rent is. So I'm a living witness of what it is to be homeless. I have a place, don't get me wrong. I got a roof over my head. I'm okay, right? But I was stationed in Orlando. Everything I have is in Orlando. Starting fresh here in Miami, there's no help for the wilder. There's nothing but criticism. Does that make sense?
Let me say that personally, right.
But I'm grateful that I have money. I'm grateful I have skills. I'm grateful that we are building, you know, everything again right now. So imagine the people, that women that's going through a divorce, abusive relationship, and want to be able to get to a place to leave a house, right?
Yeah.
They can't. Because you got to show first, last. You got to pay for that first, last, and deposit.
Anthony, give me a ballpark figure, dollar wise, for what you're saying right now.
$1,200 right now for an efficiency.
And a move in, you need a total of how much?
$5,400. And show.
Okay.
Three times the amount your rent.
All right. Let me put this out there. Let me put this out there. I'm going to just attempt to paint a picture of Florida, but I can do this with the entire United States. All right. Florida's got 67 counties, and Miami's in Dade County, Florida. That's one of the 67 counties. Now, here's the way I'm thinking. Once you get outside of Dade County, Broward and Dade County, Broward has Fort Lauderdale, and those are densely populated counties. Once you get out of Dade County, Hillsborough County, that's where St. Pete and Tampa is, Orange County, where Orlando is, Tallahassee, I don't know the name of that county, and Jacksonville. We're talking about five major population hubs. Florida is basically a rural state. Now, in the United States, on a larger picture, the United States has 19,500 municipalities. That's from small little bitty municipalities that have maybe a population of 51 people. Yes, people, there are towns in this country that are municipalities that have maybe 51 people in it, up to a New York City that's got over 8 million people, all right? But then 19,500, that doesn't include unincorporated communities. So there's a lot of towns. But out of the 19,500, okay, 86% of the population of the United States occupies only 3 to 5% of the total land mass in the United States. The United States is basically a rural country. So what I've done, because I had a bad situation.
Point. That's my entire point.
Yeah.
100 acres of land is nothing to build on.
Right.
And it's time for them to give us land.
Right.
And that's in Chicago, up north, west, east, north, and south.
Right, up in Chicago, because when I flew, the last time I was in Chicago was about 3.5 years ago, something like that. I just flew up there from the day. I flew out of Orlando. I was just up there for the day. But I flew into Chicago, met my contacts on the ground in Chicago, and then we did a beeline to Hopkins Park, Illinois, and Pembroke, Kankakee County, which is all rural. So my primary strategy, this is just me, is buy rural and buy land by the acre and build that way. And the other reason why I'm doing that, but, you know, that's why I like what Anthony, what you're talking about, I like that. I like Chris, what he's talking about, because it just, you know, you have more options on what's out here. Okay, but the United States is primarily a rural place. And for people that might be struggling in Seattle, Washington, Los Angeles, California, Washington, D.C., or Miami, Florida, or a gazillion other places, if you would just drive maybe 30 minutes, 45 minutes, an hour, maybe 90 minutes, a radius of that particular town, you'll find a sustainable place where you can live. Now, if you learn how to build something, okay, then, you know, the better off you might be. Yesterday, I'm not going to play it today, but we played an audio of a guy that built his cabin for $2,000. And he has a solar system in there that generates his electricity. And so a total of $5,000. Whereas a friend of mine that lives in Baltimore, he was paying like $700 a month rent. I said, look, man, for that kind of money, I would go to Home Depot, Lowe's, Menards. So you got to find a patch of dirt first. And then instead of paying that kind of rent, because I'm really extreme. Anything over $500, I'm talking about, no, I got to own it. But I already know I can't pull that off in Manhattan, New York, or Chicago. So I'm willing to go to a rural area where I can get ahead of the game. But that's a whole other different podcast. We got quite a few people on the switchboard today, so let's hold on, wait a minute. I'm losing track here. Okay. 773-368, your mic is open.
Yes, good morning. Can you hear me all right?
We can hear you perfectly.
Hello? Yes,
yeah, we can
I
hear
want
you.
To just shout out. So happy, praise the Lord, to meet Anthony and Miss Evelyn, and I heard Chris before, but I'm a late kid to the program, and everybody's just doing what God wants you meant to do. One of the things that we just leaving God out of it. It seems that God word is a fear. They think that's religion and we're going to offend somebody. But I want to commend everybody to keep doing what you're doing. Mama, Evan, you are senior solid gold. That's what I call program. Senior solid. Get more about that later. But again, I want to thank L.A. for this project. He's been on it for 9 years, and this we're just about to do a quantum leap. Things about to explode. Thank God, praise the Lord, that this is it. This is where the work is. Now, let me tell you who I am real quick. Chris, L.A. told me I could do this. I am Delmar America. That's a different spelling. You explain it later. My program is called FamPassionShowtime.com, and I've been in traditional Christian for 50 plus years, and I have been motivated, moved by God to go beyond that. Traditional Christian has left us in heaven only, going to heaven, and almost no earthly good. I said almost. So my program is about using the family, one part of it, to do all the things you guys are talking about. The key focus is family. The guy that did the shooting in the school Monday, he listed four things I covered on my show last night. He said, I have no friends, no family, no social life, All that he said there was all come from family. I teach that the first government and everything we learn about life succeeds should be taught from the family. Chris talked about yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. That's the generation I come from. None of that's being taught today, pretty much. So I just want to say a shout-out again. Thank L.A. for what he's doing with this talk show. Thank Anthony. Anthony, you're just being trained to go through another level, man. It's just called trial and tribulation. We're in a spiritual warfare, so that's going to happen. So keep
man, God
going.
Bless you. God bless you, man. God bless you.
Yeah. So, Ms. Allen, I'll be in touch with you. Chris, we're going to do all this. Praise the Lord. And so I'm just coming from bringing in the approach that, and by the way, my lesson tonight is, what is man? What is man? Devil has took that away. When we look at the definition of man and what he is, we are creators. We are created in his God, and that's what the young people don't know is being taught. Nowhere from churches don't even teach it. Churches don't teach what man is. They don't teach that. They teach religion and going to heaven, and that ain't what is that us. Now, again, I'm not at our church. I've been plus years. But the Lord has to show me, oh, there's another message out there. And my whole ministry is about getting us back on track with what we can do now. I tell people there's nothing in the Bible about how to live in heaven. Nothing. It's all about how to live here on earth. And that's not what the Christian community has been teaching. Let me shut up for that. But thank you, L.A., for giving me a moment.
Delmo, you have a podcast here on Blog Talk Radio. Give us the time and the number, the call-in number to listen in or participate.
Okay, the time is 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, Chicago, Sunday through Friday, 7 p.m. Central Time. The call-in number is 563-999-3028.
Can you repeat, right, please?
Yes. 563-999-3028. And that's a free call. Blog Talk Radio, by the way. And I'm on Sunday night through Friday night, 7 p.m.
All right, tune in. He's got a good program, man. Thank you, Delmar, for that.
You.
Let's take the next caller. Area code 407, your mic is open. 407, mic's open. You might be on mute, 407. 407-350.
I am on mute. Good evening. I mean, good afternoon. My name is Ingrid Bryant with Reaching Our Destiny. I was just told to come on this call by Anthony Whitfield, so right now I'm just listening because I was just brought into the call.
No problem.
And tell them about what you're doing in Arcadia.
Right now we're doing property advocacy from Fort Myers, Punta Gorda, Arcadia, and Orlando. So what we do is we go and visit homeowners. We offer them free inspections and free advocacy help to move their process along when it comes to their getting their homes fixed, denied claims, liaisons with the insurance adjusters, and we just really, really work to assist people. There are a lot of areas in these cities, a lot of underserved areas that are basically being overlooked because other areas have precedence. It shouldn't be this way, but it is the way that it is. And so we've been seeing, it's 3 weeks post-hurricane, and we've been seeing cities that literally have had no tarping, no dry outs, no intervention, limited FEMA work because they're basically considered, you know, underserved or lower income, some middle income communities. So basically my team has been going a lot of door-to-door, a lot of knocking, a lot of talking to people just to see where they are and how we can be an assistance to speed their process along. I'm actually driving. I just left Fort Myers. They said it's North Fort Myers. It seemed like it was south to me. But I just left that area, and I'm now headed into Arcadia, Florida, which is where we started our work for Hurricane Ian. Reaching our destiny, we're pretty seasoned in this. We have worked Hurricane Matthew, Hurricane Michael, Hurricane Irma, Hurricane Harvey, and now Hurricane Ian. This hurricane is really, really one that is extraordinary in so many ways, because Hurricane Michael, though it was devastated to Mexico City and Panama City, and it was really wind-driven, those are pretty much the areas that got hit. But Hurricane Ian has probably covered 80% of the state of Florida, all the way from Fort Myers, one coast, all the way over to Melbourne Beach and Daytona. And it's probably going to take a good 2 years plus to sort through all of this work on the ground. Once the emergency crews get out, yes, once the emergency crews get out and they pick up all the debris and all the limbs and all the trees, now we have a big situation with people getting paid out in order to fix their homes. We're looking at, last time I looked online, it was a $74 billion hurricane. And that's probably the number, I'm pretty sure, is escalated from there. So in the big scheme of things, insurance companies don't want to pay that. FEMA is just basically giving people enough money to cover their particular basic needs. So, you know, them replacing all of the furniture in your house is not a need per se. That's a basic need. That's not a basic need. That's not a necessity. Them giving you something that somewhere that you can actually stay that might be less than what you're used to, but it's a roof over your head. That's what FEMA does. A lot of people are not educated. I think what happened in this hurricane is everybody ran to FEMA without knowing what rules apply. And one of the rules that apply, that if you have homeowners insurance, whether you know it or not, if you have a mortgage on your home, you have mortgage-backed insurance because of state law. But if you have any type of insurance on that house as a homeowner, FEMA's not going to cover the cost to replace your house. That's your insurance responsibility. So there's been a lot of misunderstanding with that. We have people in Orlando who have been sitting in flooded-out houses for 3 weeks waiting for FEMA to come rescue them, and point blank, they're not going to. So there's a lot of miseducation, especially amongst minority and Hispanic communities on how all this works. So I thank you for your time. If anyone will ask any questions, or if anybody knows anybody who might be needing our assistance, on our webpage, www.reachingourdestiny.com, we have a button that clicks to our property advocacy page, and they can put in their information there, or they can call us at 407-603-5387. Thank you.
Thank you. Very informative. Anybody want to chime in on her comment before we go to the next call?
I was going to say thank you, because we need property advocacy, and you're amazing. Thank you. Thank you for doing what you're doing, and you just come out here educating me that you're possible. You know, there's nothing impossible. It's I'm possible, but that I'm speaking to you, so you're possible. That's the thing, and I love it because you're going to give so many possibilities out here across this country by sharing that with us. And it's you know, people are getting this information for free just by paying attention. And it's the one thing we have in life that's yours. And the other thing you have is you make up your own mind. No one will ever make it up for you unless you're forced to. But you ultimately make up your mind and you make those decisions. And I'm glad I made the decision to get up on Friday morning and go in a room I haven't been in, because that's how I met this man that's given me the opportunity to be here speaking with all of you. So thank you.
Okay, that's Chris Collins, and we'll be back with him in a moment. Let's go to the next caller here, 314 area code. Your mic is open.
That lady talking about the insurance was pretty accurate, but not all the way. Because your mortgage insurance usually only covers fire. It doesn't cover burglary. Doesn't cover water and damage. It only insures that mortgage company that has the loan out, that if some calamity happens at the house that destroys the structure, that the mortgage company will collect on the insurance. And people should seek their own separate insurance when they are in the contractual position of a mortgage. Now, you've been talking about people need to build their own houses. Well, that's easier said than done. You know, in St. Louis County, where I know very well, they do allow landowners to build their own home, but they have to prove that they know what it is that they're doing. And each step of the way, practically, like before you can cover a wall up with drywall, the inspector has to come out and check the electrical wiring to make sure that it's done to code. Another reason why come you have to have good insurance, because if your house catch on fire and the flames damage the house next door to you, well, you're going to be liable because that insurance company is going to come after you. And the gentleman that talked about down in Miami where you have to put up those down payments, that's because people in that area must not be paying their rent. And the leasers or renters are putting things in place to make sure that they can recoup their money. But then too, LA, if you have to put up $5,400 or show that you have that much, well, then for those people to go out in the rural area, that's nowhere near enough money to cover that. I mean, think about it. They got
to
acquire
land. What he's talking about, what the example that he gave, I believe that's statewide, because here in Florida, here where I'm at in this part of Florida, which is central Florida, what he says, same thing goes right where I'm at too.
Well, that's probably something that renters or the property owners have adopted. I don't think the state can tell property owners that you gotta charge people.
No, it's not the state doing it. It's customary. Well, here's my theory on it.
LA, please, let me answer this.
Go ahead.
Let me answer this for you. All right. Sir, what is your name?
My name is Bianchi.
Pleasure to meet you, sir. My name is Anthony Whitfield, and I give you peace and blessings. But we're talking about solutions. How do we fix the problem? How do we help people out? We know the problem. We understand it. Our program And what the young lady was just speaking about was fixing the problem. How do we help people that cannot afford that? We're not talking about the people that live rent-free, squatters, as we say. We're talking about people that go to work every single morning, come home, deal with life, and then wake up and do it the same way. We're just offering a better solution. That's all. How do we work the problem and fix the problem? Solutions only.
Well, I was listening to him. He was saying that people need to move out of rural areas. Well, if you work in a minimal job, your transportation, your ability to move out in a rural area, and you can't afford it. I mean, I think you quoted the price of $5,400. Am I right?
Yes.
All right. So you take that person that can't afford the $5,400, well, they're not going to afford to go out to the rural area and build a house.
Yes, sir. That's where our program comes in. They don't have to pay that. They come to us.
Oh,
they start working the same day they get there. The same day they get there, the next morning, they're in orientation. The same day they get there.
Are they going to build a house when they come to you? I'm just asking. I might want to do it myself.
Yes.
So
yes,
am I going to build a house?
Yep, no problem. Ms. Bryant, are you still there? Ms.
Yes.
Bryant is a better speaker than I am. Ms. Bryant, are you still there?
Yes, I'm still here.
Can you please address the situation?
Okay. So I'm trying to get a clear understanding because I jumped into the middle of this conversation. We're asking about $5,400 for down payment. What's the question?
Well, no, I was saying that if a person can't afford $5,400 to move into a residence within Miami, then
right.
When they go out into a rural area, how are they going to come up with money to buy land, build a home, then cover the transportation from where they're able to do that to get back to their job in Miami?
Well, here's the thing.
Well,
it's not that they don't, let's keep this, it's not that they don't have transportation. And it's not, and maybe they don't have a $5,400 down payment in order to get the property and get the piece of land. But when you have financing involved, it's not necessary to say that they need that. Okay, because we all know there are programs even in the mortgage area where you can get zero down or no closing cost and all of this stuff, but you as a renter, you still got to pay those fees. So I think what we're doing is we're comparing ownership with rental, and that's two different things. So the same people that may not, even at this point, if we're not even talking about container homes, the same person that may not have $5,400 to put down for a place to rent in Miami may have $1,500 or $2,000 to go buy them a single-wide trailer and put it on the lot. The difference is if you're trying to rent versus if you're trying to buy. And so there's not all of those, I think where some of the costs, there's not all of those costs always incurring when you're looking at a situation that you're trying to buy and get into more permanently. The rental situation now is totally escalated. And like the other guy said, he's in Central Florida, I'm in Central Florida, and I can tell you, they ask you for first, last, and sometimes security even, and all of the prices are inflated. So where you used to only pay $1,000 or $1,300 or $1,400 to rent a house, you might as well look at double that now. And then they're asking for a deposit on top of that. But that's not so much in the housing market. So I think that I believe that's kind of the answer to that question.
Well, yeah, you said about a trailer. Now, that's different from building a house. When I came into the conversation, people were looking at this marquee. People was talking about building a home. And I
yeah, but they're talking
about building.
We have to define. We have to define what a. All right, when you talk about housing, okay, mm-hmm. and you're using the term home, a home is an intangible concept. It's more psychological and emotional based. A house is a legalized term. Like, for instance, with my 4 acres in Hamilton County, Florida, to build a house, because the code enforcement people, the planning people, when they hear that word house, all right, the minimum square footage of a house, H-O-U-S-E, in that place is, you know, it's got to be on a permanent foundation and all this, that, whatever. It's got to meet code. It's got to be a minimum of 480 square feet. I'm never going to put a house on that 4 acres. I'll put housing on there, but it won't be
a
house.
Yeah, but you're not going to put no trailer on there if the community don't allow a trailer on there.
Well,
right?
I'm allowed to do that. I'm allowed to do that. I found that out. Everything I buy is zone agricultural. I don't want anything to do with residential housing, although I can put one on there. But I look for, I deal with, and this is outside the scope of this conversation, but I buy land that is zone agricultural because I have more leeway to do what I want to do on the property.
Yeah,
now,
but
a person that lives now,
those
a person,
things, those get around. You know, being a code official for a municipality, well, I wrote ordinances in that St. Louis County. There's certain things that you just can't do in cities. Now, you can go out in the rural area, but you got to contend with this. You got to have an insurance. Would an insurance company, based on your method of doing what you did, would they insure it? Well, maybe you can insure it yourself. Then, secondly, if you're going to keep it the rest of your life, because if you're going to, if you are wanting to sell that to somebody else, then before that municipality let another person, a citizen, move into your place that you built, it's going to have to be thoroughly inspected because they would at that point become liable. You can assume the liability when you do it yourself, as long as you show that what you're doing, you know what you're doing. They won't allow you to put drywall on studs with electrical wiring in it unless that electrical wiring has been inspected because of the safety concerns. This is all I'm trying to point out. It's more than just the simple method of we're going to build our own home. That's one thing. Now, I don't know what the zoning is down in Florida where you are. I can't tell you because I haven't studied that. I've seen that plot that you give, but I'm just telling you from my experience of being a code official, and I volunteer for a community, that those are the things that you run into. I mean, they go by.
I'm not disagreeing with anything you're saying. Because one of the things I'm saying is that people need to take a look at, for instance, this whole podcast, It's My House, evolved, and Pioc, you already know this a gazillion times. But for the new people, it evolved out of a squatter that I have in the house, or had in the house in Washington, D.C. And then I found out, you know what? It's a whole lot that I can't do in Washington, D.C., and I need to go to a place where I can basically have more freedom to do what I want to do and have not have a squatter hold me hostage for almost 3 years. That's why I went rural. And then all the particulars of that, that's a whole different podcast we're not going to get into today. I just want to make it known that you don't have to be stuck in a, if you call it stuck, in a D.C., New York, Miami. There are alternatives, and it's only limited to your imagination on what you can do. There are a lot of things you can do in a city, and there's a lot of things you can do in a rural area. For me personally, in my crazy extreme world, I prefer to be in a rural area. I prefer to be in – I don't need a police force. I don't need one.
Well, you know, I mean, this thing,
I don't need code enforcement. I don't need code enforcement.
This thing, I understand, but I'm waiting on you to build this thing in the rural area so I can take a look at it. I might want to do it too.
Yeah, well, that's the reason why we had Chris back for today, because we're planning for 2023 now.
Pembroke, that lady, I can't think of her name, that's on the old Nat Turner property, I think it is, on Pembroke. She's been trying
Pembroke,
to get
Illinois.
People to come to her.
You talking about Pembroke, Illinois?
Yeah, I believe that's where it's at. She's been trying to get people to come there and build homes on her property. Jesse Jackson had a big news conference because he wanted to try to get the county to run water, pressurized water lines there in the vicinity so people can tap into. But nobody come. You talk about tap.
I think I know
nobody
you're
come.
Talking about. She and her husband have like 75
Diane
acres
something.
Out there.
Her name is Diane something. Her name is Diane something. But she's got land, and people can come build houses on here and other structures if that's what you want to do.
The thing
is, you're only talking about a handful of people, though. You're not going to address no million. So that has to be
the majority of people, particularly in westernized countries, the majority of people, now this is just my commentary on it, they are addicted, just like crack cocaine. They are addicted to the comfort and conveniences of an urbanized area. They want a bus line. They want a metro. They want to walk to work. They want to take a bike to work. Some of the places, all the places where I buy, if you don't have those comfort creatures,
How is she going to go to work in those places like that? I don't think they're addicted. I think that they're advantage. I think that they're taking advantage. Well, let me tell you something. You mean to tell me that I sent you several videos on YouTube of what they call elite communities that, you know, African-Americans live in, especially in Texas? Those people are not addicted. That's what they want to do because it's an investment. They want a nice home that can accumulate appreciation. They want communities. They want the things that support the community, that being a fire department, that being sewer, electricity, and water, and good schools, and places to entertain. That's what
all
they
right,
want.
Now, see, that all right, and it's different from everybody. Now, here's the world that I live in, okay? I don't like public schools. I don't like state-sponsored education. I'm a homeschool advocate. Number two, I don't need municipal services. I know how to do my own stuff, or I know people that know how to do it. There are 29 million Americans right now that are working remotely from their home in their pajamas as we speak. I don't need a subway. I don't need a metro.
Yeah, but you said
that's the way I roll.
Many people don't. Many
one of the reasons why I went rural, the house I have in D.C. that's been sitting vacant for over 3 years, the taxes on that thing is over $5,000 a year. I got to pay more if it's a vacant house.
Well, why come it's vacant?
They don't have all those rules. They don't have no – every place that I've bought in Texas – like, for instance, I bought 10 acres of – what's the question?
You didn't answer the question. Why come it's vacant?
Because D.C., you don't have no say-so over who goes in. Once they go in there – you know the story. I had a house sitter.
Why don't you put it up for sale?
I don't want to sell it.
Well, then you are enjoying the conditions that you're experiencing.
The only reason why it's sitting vacant right now because, once again, I put a house sitter in there that didn't have to pay a penny's worth of rent. When I said you need to roll out, they used the system in attempts to try to take the house.
Those are
circumstances. Washington, D.C.
You know what? I live
a couple of miles away from the property.
Yeah, I own several pieces of property, and I sold them. I bought them for my daughter, really, and that was a mistake. I got rid of them before the housing crash because I don't want to be fooling around with rental property. So I didn't just let them go vacant and pay the rent on them. I got rid of them and let somebody else have all their property.
Well,
so
everybody, Walker, everybody, look, there's no one cookie cutter for everybody. They're different cookie cutters. They're different. Because everybody's got different situations and whatnot. So I'm holding on to the house. So I just rather have it sit empty. Now I got somebody that will be moving in. I got somebody moving in now that I've known from high school. But D.C., in my opinion, is Washington, D.C., just in my opinion, I can call me crazy, is very socialist. Very socialist.
I don't know about that, L.A., but what I'm saying, I built a house myself. I designed it. I built it myself, 14-room, 4,000 square feet. You've seen pictures of it. I've done all the excavation and everything. I won't live in that house no more because of the neighborhood. I'm contemplating tearing it down. But I pay the taxes on the property, even though nobody's in it. So I don't complain about that. So people put themselves in those circumstances. Now, as far as helping the people that is unable to maintain, make these astronomical mortgage payments, I say rent payments and lease, they in a predicament. Because most people in areas, they have jobs and salary and wages that can handle that. And if you don't, then you're in a predicament. Now, you should have, maybe churches can come together and come up with a sponsored program that will do something along the lines of affordable housing. I wouldn't depend on the government to do it, but a lot of people do. I think that's the wrong way to go. You had a guy in Philadelphia by the name of Allen. I can't think of his last name, the first name, but he got involved in housing for affordability. Now, of course, they had to use Section 8, because then if you don't use Section 8, then you run into the condition like the gentleman in Miami is experiencing, where they want you to put down payments first and last. It also
that's the whole state of Florida. That's just not Miami. That's in any urbanized area of county in the state of Maryland. I'm at Maryland.
You know why they do that. You know why they do that, don't you?
My theory is somewhere down the line, people weren't paying those utility bills.
Now, if people have done the same thing that you said about the people that squatted in your property. They've done the same thing like they've done in Detroit, wouldn't pay the water bill. Then, things became what they became. So you got people out there that's less than honest, that's less than appreciative. And then the experience that a person that's providing housing have with them make them take on certain policies that those coming later on don't particularly like and have a difficult time trying to make ends meet to comply.
So in Detroit, when you buy a property in the city of Detroit proper, if there's a past water due bill, the new owner has to pay that cost at the settlement table. But we're getting outside the scope of the conversation. We're going back, circling back to Chris Collins, our featured guest. Chris, we're in overtime now, but anything you want to comment on?
Oh, definitely. Yes, I've been trying to break into the conversation, but I also, I respect people to continue to talk, because the more that you say, the more doors that you're opening that actually needs to be addressed. One was, what do people do? Everything that you've done in life, are you willing to repeat it? Are you wanting to change it? Or is it, do we say every person that is going to prison, they have to go back? Well, guess what? 96% are. That's crazy. And it's at least 95. I know that number. 95% are recidivism. If we reach them and we teach them that they can have a home when they get out, they can have a house right now. They're not ready for the city yet.
because the city still looks at them as being the problem, and they, so far they would be, because they're getting dropped off with change in their pocket and no services to help. So right there's key. Let's stop bringing people with more knowledge once they go to prison back onto the street. The thing about rural building, you know, we can build it and urbanize it as we do it, because you need to bring those services so you don't have to drive for them. But the other part is there don't need to be a food desert nowhere. But there does need to be a home. There's more homeless children than there are adults. Okay, they didn't ask to be here, but you know what? They're the solution to every adult's problem. They're inheriting every one of them. And they're not the future leaders of the world. They're the now leaders of the world. Because as I teach them, and I want to reach them all and teach them all, because they own something. They have hope. As humans on planet Earth, housing our people everywhere, and I'm taking the purest humans first. Now, every adult owns it as well, but you got to earn it by learning it. And you being a code enforcement, I appreciate that, because you can answer some questions right now just to make it fact. Steel construction, structural steel construction, made with the steel studs of 18 gauge, they do make a 20 gauge structural. If that is built exactly in the same dimensions, every blueprint that's ever been built, that house exceeds the residential code.
It exceeds the fire code. I erect a structure steel building for a living, like the one that came down in 9/11 in New York. That's what I've done. From 19, I had my own company putting up buildings like that, building office buildings, bridges across waters, roadways, and railways, and industrial plants for Ford, General Motors, Chrysler. So that's what I've done. But I also expended my time to a local municipality, and I knew buildings very well. And metal stud construction is not used in a stick, what we call a stick and frame building. Now, I'll tell you one structure where it's used, that's in monolithic domes. Monolithic domes, I think, is a very good design. They're hurricane-proof, fireproof, termite-proof. And if you use steel studs for the interior walls, and also, well, you got to use them in the interior wall because the exterior wall is made out of the dome structure material. It's a very good thing because your fire insurance is practically nothing. I've seen structures like that where the insurance is like maybe $150 a year.
Now let me.
But you got to use a different. You got to use armor cable for your wiring, though. When you use those.
Let me interrupt you for a quick second. All right, now, in 2005 we had Hurricane Katrina. In July of 2006, I built a home right where the eye come across for Hurricane Katrina, and I put it back on the stilts, right on the water, right where the other one was. The house next door to it is 1,500 square feet, made of wood, and it pays double what it did before Katrina took the other one, because they raised the rates 200%. The house that I built was 2,500 square feet, so it's 1,000 square foot bigger, but this house don't burn, don't absorb water, stronger, termite-free, mold-resistant, seismic, recyclable, built it without a dumpster. Build it cheaper than wood. We build it for $60 a square foot versus $250 a square foot for a local builder to build it out of wood. And this house is paying $600 less in insurance than it was before Katrina took the other one, because you get a 60% discount, 20 for fire, 20 for wind, 20 for water, plus your termites. And just those three, wind, fire, and water. And that is what is destroying our homes today. And when you talk about, you know, special wiring, there's a clip. My machine makes 36,000 linear feet of material per day. Now, it punches holes in it for the electrical and the plumbing. You put a plastic clip that is pre-made for this in it, and it doesn't touch. Nothing touches. And they run Romex through it. They run PEX through it. They run copper through it. They run anything through it because it doesn't touch and doesn't oxidize. So, utilizing the technologies of today by using the washers, dryers, refrigerators, stoves, water heaters, and cars from these natural disasters. Because in 2000, after I built that home, in 2011, I built a home in Bloomington, Illinois, out of recycled cars from Hurricane Katrina. And I built it in the middle of the woods with cordless screw guns to prove I could do it in any jungle on the planet. When we stood it up, the inspector walked in, and I had no interior walls. I had the roof on it and no floor in it. And he looks up at those trusses, and he says, "I can't inspect this." And I said, "Why? What's wrong?" And he said, "Well, for one," he says, "the blueprint said 2x4s. You build it out of 2x6s. He says, "And there's no mending plates." He said, "That's a solid piece of metal from one end of the building to the other." He said, "All your webbing's there." He says, "I could go through here and count your screws, I guess." But he says, "I got to go educate myself to even do this." And this is the lead building inspector for all the residentials. And I made him hate his job. Because every day when he passed one of those inspections, he was passing something that's an inferno. And what my goal is to start a fire in your heart that water will never put out, but start an inferno that will never burn you, and give these children something positive to do in the afternoon. Take away, idle hands are the devil's playground, right? So we want children to realize that every time they're thinking and dreaming and imagining, those are creations. What if they were positive and they changed someone's life? By them just doing it, but they also
I agree with you. That is, as kids learn to do that, my house I designed had 2x8 walls. I had double 2x8 for my roofing raffles. It's a slope design. I had two layers of 5/8 plywood for my roof sheeting. My floors had two layers of 3/4 inch plywood for my roof, my flooring. I ran 1-inch pipes through my walls to supply, it was 3/4. I didn't have no 1/2-inch pipe, no place. And, of course, I had 12-gauge wire to all my receptacles.
Man, dude, you build a tank. You did build a tank. I'm not going to say you didn't. But let's have this discussion. If a tornado came through there and hit your house and picked it up, and it threw that thing a mile down the road, because I've cleaned up tornadoes. And could you take that material and turn it back into that house? Because I can.
If I wanted to. Get this. My concrete walls are 10 inches thick. My foundation walls are 10 inches thick.
You build an ICF house. So you have concrete insulated walls with foam on both sides.
I had foam on the outside. They were sitting on a 2-foot wide footing that was 1 foot thick, and my smallest reinforcement rod was 5/8. In the corners, I had number 18 bars. So that was something I'd done on myself because I have experience in construction. The materials was practically free. I think I poured 80 yards of concrete, probably only cost me $3,000. But that was back then. Now, would I do that again now? No. No, I would not, because that work would kill you.
Hey, but you know what? You built a concrete home. The perfect marriage to a concrete house is the trusses that are on top of it. And I built one. There's one. They're all over. But it's a perfect marriage between concrete and metal. But the one thing about that mimosa termite is it'll eat concrete and it won't eat metal. And that means it can last 1,000 years plus.
You're absolutely right. Termites will eat concrete. You're absolutely right.
That's correct. And it's
I guess so.
You know, I right, appreciate you being here, you know, for that. Go ahead, whoever was that to us. Was there a lady that said something?
Yeah, but I'm going to get off here and let you guys have your show back. We make things sound easy, but it has to be detailed. You know, one show to spur the interest, but then you got to get into the details so people will know, because people start off into something, and then they get halfway or even a quarter way into it, and they have no visible future to get to the end. That's because they was led by emotions rather than the actual facts. So you guys go ahead and carry on. I'm sorry for interrupting.
I know.
You can trim it as always. Go ahead, Chris.
No, sir, you're exactly correct. That's the whole point. We're not going to leave these houses half finished. These homes are going to get done. People are going to be able to see them. And we're going to create a museum across the planet Earth that everyone can go see, but our children will be able to say, I built that, and be so proud of it and see it for their whole entire life, be able to show their grandchildren, because their grandchildren are doing the same thing, coming out and showing them what the new designs they're going to come up with. Because you know as well as I do, out of this material, we can build every blueprint that's ever been designed and every one that will be designed, as long as that AutoCAD says it hits the load parameters that it needs to hit for where it's going to sit. And we can make that happen, and we can do it all green. We can build 100, even if we do concrete, we can do it out of hempcrete. Everything about this is supposed to move all of us into a next movement of a stick-built home, because I can show up with just those sticks right there in your yard and build every wall, build every truss, and we turn right around and put that thing up with your entire community, just like the Amish did back then. But it's time for us to take those blinders off and realize that everyone, every home has problems, and they need to know that if something's going on in them, they're doing this. But if everybody jumped out for 20 minutes to an hour, 2 hours of your day, once a week, and went and changed someone's life forever in those 2 hours, was it worth it? I think that was the most payment in that week that you would get any part of monetary of what you're about to do. And you didn't have to do any stress, and you got that true thank you. I heard Anthony say something about it. I mentioned something Monday. That true thank you is more payment than anyone can ever give me. And all I did was have to make sure that the greed did not exceed the need and help someone overcome something that is a problem, because every problem there is a solution, but it's not trying to go through it alone. And not only giving somebody a home, but to continue to pour into them. Don't just leave them there. You know, there's somebody in throughout this country could have a conversation with that person, because the other person needed to have a conversation too. We need to keep our minds active. Our minds is unlimited for what we're able to do, but 90% of our body, we're limited. So using your hands, your arm, your legs, every part of your body, you are limited on how much money you can make. But if you use 10% of it, and we work smarter, not harder, and do it in a way that empowers everyone, no more racism, no more racism. Don't teach our children racism. They don't know it. So we need to get over what we've had to go through, because we can't do anything about yesterday, but what can we do today to make sure that tomorrow, yesterday never happens? That's the key about us all coming together and having this discussion, and I loved it. I loved all aspects of it, because it was hitting on many different things. But it comes down to the root of, we need to know who we are when no one's around, create and make a sound. Don't answer to no one. Answer to yourself. Figure it out. And as you do that, we will see that. Because I was able to see some kids that never built anything, built two homes, showed up
and had it stood up under trusses. It's on my Instagram, and they've done it and have never done it before. But it's what they saw by never using a saw. They never touched a saw. Everything was made to length. All they did was put the jigsaw puzzle together, and you can do it anywhere. A 13-year-old and a 16-year-old brothers from another city showed up in a city with a problem. Their city didn't have one, but those kids had 2 hours. In 2.5 hours, they built a 100-square-foot home with a queen-size bedroom in the attic. It was 10 foot tall, so there was loft sleeping spaces. You could sleep at least 4 people in there comfortably, and it would get them out of the cold for the winter. And we just wanted to do a demonstration. But it was, what could they do? And, you know, those kids want to do this every day. And now that I'm getting the chance to be able to give them that opportunity, I'm going to look forward to seeing what they do and how many people can change lives of. But the community that I live in, they, you know, it's against the law to have your animal outside in the winter. But it's okay to have your mother, brother, sister, aunt, or grandmother, grandfather, aunt, niece, nephew, your dad. It doesn't matter what the title is. They are allowed to be outside in the winter. To me, what is humane? You know, so this is a question we all got to answer ourselves, but it's not about me. It's about we. And it's what we are all going to get out of it, but it's what we have to do together because we can't do it alone. And I thank you for the time and the podcast today, and I'm sorry for running into overtime, but thank you.
No, man. When it runs overtime, that's a good thing. We don't have any specific time limits on here because this podcast live stream can last 1 minute to last almost 3 hours. So it when we're overtime, that's a good thing.
I know that have their things. I do know that. There's been some ladies on here that would like to say some things, and they've been texting
We have some time to do that. If anybody who wants to talk, press one, and I'll know which line to pick up. And then we can, they can, you know, express what, you know, whatever they want to. Once again,
yeah, they were
press one that way.
Press one.
Yeah.
That was funny because they were asking me. I said, well, press one. That's what so, yeah, thank you.
Or if I know their area code, if I know that, I can take an educated guess on who.
I can do that. All right, one would be a 386-6679.
You know what? They were on here earlier, but I don't see them on here now.
She's the one that's down in Pine Island, and she's doing medical supplies. That's the one that where our tent wound up getting taken by a tornado.
Now,
so.
All right, wait a minute. Somebody just popped up. Wait a minute. Geez, all right. Somebody just raised it. All right. Okay, all right, Orlando, I'm closing that mic. That's 407. 314, closing that one. That's Del Mar.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you, but now we're trying to hold it, Del Mar. Chris, you have somebody from 517 or 312? The 386 was on here, but they disappeared. They were on here earlier, but I don't see them on the switchboard now, 386. What I do have available is 312, somebody from that area code, and 517. Okay, you don't recognize those two area codes? All right. Yeah, Mom Evelyn dropped off, so all right. Yeah, 312 and 517. If you know those two, I can open those up. Hold on, wait a minute. Oh, Chris disappeared. All right, you know what? And the system might not allow him to call back in because
we're still here. I'm still here, big brother. Mr. LAJ.
All right, well, you know what? All right, Chris, I don't know what the system level. All right, well, Anthony, all right. Give us your comments here. You might have the last word because we're in overtime, okay. And once people drop out, I don't know if they'll let them call back in. Anyway, Anthony, looks like you might have the final word for today.
Man, listen to me. We have Les Brown coming in town November 11th to the 13th here in Miami, Florida. And the whole goal is the champion mindset, changing people's mindset, letting you know that you can make it. The crazy part about life is, if I could say this without getting you banned, and a whole nother discussion, Kanye, he said what he was going to do last year in September. He said it. I want to get away from all these major contracts. All these major contracts are keeping me a slave. That's what made the black man a slave, because he dealt with the contract. He want to get out of that. He said it. We are not slaves. We have a vision. We have a program. And if we just learn how to work together, we can bless our communities. The reason why there's killings in our neighborhood, minus Bowie, where my son got shot at, but not like how it is in Capitol Heights, right, and New Carrollton, because they don't accept that. And they have programs for the kids. They have solutions. What is our solution? Our solution is plain and simple, giving everyone a champion mindset to help them reach their destiny. People just need help to reach their destiny. My name is Anthony Whitfield. You can always find me at DestinyContainerHomes.com, DestinyContainerHomes.com, and my cell number is 410-970-3031, 410-970-3031. If you don't remember nothing else, remember to hug yourself. Give yourself a big hug. Tell yourself that you are proud of yourself. I promise you, it's going to make you feel good. Just hug yourself right now. Peace and blessings. Again, my name is Anthony Whitfield. Thank you so much for the opportunity to be on the call. Thank you, Mr. Chris. Mama, thank you. Ms. Brian, thank you for coming on. Mr. L.A., man, you just stay focused. Keep pushing. Just do what you got to do. And just believe, great is coming. It's your mindset. I don't care what the adversary things that happen bad. I don't care. I don't care how many people let you down. Even the night before, they said they got it.
Okay, the program's not over with yet. We were talking all that time. I can hear you. You can hear me because you called in on my line. But they couldn't hear us. So, Chris, for the sake, and I was playing the outro music, so I stopped that. So, Chris, we're still on air. We got a few minutes. Give us your final thoughts again because they didn't hear it. And then we can wrap up that way.
No problem. I felt inspired, and most definitely humbled for being here, and I got educated. I love learning, and you know, I hope that everyone here got some value out of the discussion that we had today, and given for free by us paying attention. It's the only thing that we can do by giving a little bit of our time. And I do appreciate all of anyone that's listening, spent our live time here, that got to speak, that didn't get to speak. I appreciate you. We're going to most definitely carry on this conversation. And that was the part you missed just a second ago, as he responded to what I said. And it's, I'm very thankful that the people that came on today could, you know, stand up and validate things that are going on that we need to handle, because every problem has a solution. But our children are the solution to every adult's problem that they are inheriting, that we are giving them. And we need to give them the opportunity that we didn't have, but we do now. We have the technology. We have the ability. And it's also, what can we give ourselves? You know, I do ask the question, who are you when no one's around, when you get to create and make a sound? I'll get to see, so will everyone else. And it's what we're all going to be. Not what we was, it's what we're going to be. And I tell the prisoners, tell them, hey, would you like to have a name instead of a number? You're eligible for parole, but I want to ask you a few questions. And they said, yeah. And I said, how about a house instead of a cell? I said, not a home. So it's just a house. I said, but it's yours. So with an address, you can get mail. I said, would you like that? They said, yeah. And I said, what if I would show you how to build yourself a home for you and your family? And you have it, and it'd be yours. You'd be proud of it. I said, would that be good? They're like, yeah. And I said, well, I need you to help me get the people off the street that's in your city. So when you come out, you actually paid your debts to society, and society needs to look at you as the solution to the city's problems that they already had. And I got that today in this podcast that it's on its way. And I thank all of you. I appreciate it.
Okay. We appreciate you too, Chris, and everybody that called in and listening. You can listen to the on-demand version of this live stream podcast right here on Blog Talk Radio, just within a matter of minutes, probably more than 5 minutes. You can just go to the link on Blog Talk Radio and then click it, and then you can play it back as many times as you want. On that, we'll have Chris and other people back again sooner than you think. Everyone have a good rest of the day.